If it may please the court, I'm Michael Bednash. I am the attorney for the appellants in this matter, Michael Dishman, individually and as guardian or as executor of the estate of James L. Dishman and James Dishman Jr., Linda Davis, Patricia Miller, and Vicki Kennard. The issue for the court's determination in this matter is, did the Superior Court abuse its discretion when it dismissed the plaintiff's suit for failure to comply with the affidavit of merit requirement set forth in 18 Delaware Code Section 6853?
Well, why do you call that an abuse of discretion? As I understand the argument of your opponent, is the statute has some requirements. You didn't meet the statutory requirements. Therefore, as a matter of law, you should not prevail.
It's my understanding, Your Honor, that this is, since it's a strictly a legal question, this would be the standard of review would be de novo.
Okay, so what were you telling us about abuse of discretion? Where does that fit into this, or do you want to regroup and say it's a de novo standard of review?
Well, I'll regroup and say it's a de novo standard. Be that as it may, Your Honor, just some quick background information on this case, if that's permissible. The decedent in this matter was 86 years old at the time he was admitted to a nursing home. He had a multitude of health problems, including heart problems, diabetes, renal failure, and urinary tract infections. In the summer of 2004, he had been in and out of numerous nursing homes and hospitals.
How does this relate to the sufficiency of the affidavit or the procedural defect?
Well, I was just attempting, Your Honor, to give some background, but I can just go right past that.
You'd be better off going directly to the legal argument on the assumption that we've read the briefs and understand the facts, which really, in regard to his difficulties, aren't relevant at this point.
Okay. The affidavit of merit, according to the Superior Court, failed on three bases. Number one, no curriculum vitae was attached. Number two, that the expert was not qualified to render an opinion as to the standard of care that is applicable to a physician's assistant. And number three, that the affidavit of merit did not state that the defendants breached the applicable standard of care.
Well, do you agree, as the trial court found, that the affidavit of merit as submitted did not comply with the statute?
Obviously, I do not agree with that.
So does the issue boil down to whether the court should have allowed your side to amend?
That would be one of the arguments, yes.
Well, is there any other argument?
I think the affidavit, as it was submitted, was sufficient.
Without the curriculum vitae?
You just said it didn't comply with the statute,
well,
and now you're saying it's sufficient. What is it?
I'm talking about the affidavit itself, but the fact that the CV was not attached, I agree, would not make it sufficient.
Well, why don't you separate the arguments for a moment to help us out?
Okay.
And begin with the absence of the CV and the opportunity to cure it within 60 days, which did not occur. And then you had a motion for relief from judgment.
Right.
And that was denied. Focus first on that and then go to the sufficiency of the affidavit on its merits.
Okay. As far as the failure to attach the curriculum vitae, it's the appellant's position that it was excusable neglect. We had it. I thought that it was attached, and for whatever reason, and I cannot reconstruct what happened, this was almost 5 years ago, and I've tried. It was not attached to the affidavit of merit when it was filed. So it's our position it was excusable neglect.
Well, when you initially learned that it had not been attached, did you have an extended period of time to which you could fix that problem?
I learned that it was not attached when I received the court's order on April 27, 2007, that the suit was dismissed. Up until that point, I thought that it had been attached. And so when I learned that on April 27, 2007, when I filed the motion about a week later on May 2nd, 2007, I did submit the CV at that point. So from the date I learned about the failure to attach the CV until I presented it to the court was about a week.
What information did you provide the Superior Court that the neglect was excusable?
Other than what I just represented to this court today, that was it. I just don't have an explanation. We had it. It should have been attached. And for some inadvertent reason, it was not attached. And I have no explanation as to why. And I've tried to, as I said, go back and reconstruct what happened, but it's been 5 years and I cannot do it at this point. There is some precedent, and this is attached as Exhibit D to my opening brief, and this is the Maloney case. In that case, the Superior Court did permit plaintiff's counsel to correct the affidavit of merit, which in that case did not include a CV. So there is precedent to do that.
Am I wrong when I read the record to suggest that when you first found out you hadn't attached the CV inadvertently or otherwise, the court granted you 60 days to submit the CV, but you didn't submit it within 60 days? Is that just wrong?
Yeah, the court order was, as I said, Your Honor, I received it April 27, 2007. That order, and I have it right here, said that first, the affidavit of merit does not contain the medical expert's curriculum vitae. And ultimately, what the judge said was the affidavit of merit fails on three fronts and the complaint is therefore dismissed. It is so ordered. I was not given 60 days from that point to comply. But if I had been given 60 days from that point, I did comply because I provided the affidavit of merit within 7 days or so of that order. And as the court knows, obviously, the public policy of Delaware is to hear cases on the merits. And the fact that a CV was not attached, first off, again, we think it's excusable neglect, but it also goes against the public policy of the state to hear cases on the merits.
What was the breach of the applicable standard of care?
Your Honor, I do not know. It's my understanding that the purpose of Rule 6853 is to screen out frivolous claims that assures that claims are legitimate and they deserve to be heard by the court. You need to show a prima facie showing in order to get past that first hurdle. Section 6853, subsection C, says that the affidavit must set forth the expert's opinion that there are reasonable grounds to believe that the applicable standard of care was breached by the named defendant and that the breach was a proximate cause of the injury or injuries claimed in the complaint.
So there's nothing in the record that explains the breach of the applicable statute standard of care.
It's our position that the statute doesn't require that.
Your position is all the expert needs to do at that stage is say, in my opinion, I do know the standard of care, and it has been breached, and it has been breached in a way that directly resulted or proximately caused injuries to the plaintiff.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's exactly what the statute says, subsection C. It doesn't require any additional information.
And your affidavit said both those, contained both those statements.
Yes, we believe that it does, and it's part of the record, obviously.
Now, why, if that's correct, did the trial judge dismiss it on those two bases, that it didn't state either of those?
The problem that the court had with the affidavit of merit was that it said that there are reasonable grounds to believe that quote-unquote medical negligence was committed by the defendants, as opposed to what the code requires or asks for, a breach of the applicable standard of care. So we're talking about a different term that was used, medical negligence versus breach of the standard of care.
Well, which raises the question, doesn't it? If the statute is explicit, one of the first things we learn in law school is you track the statute explicitly. And when you don't, there must be some reason for not doing it. And the inference would be your expert wouldn't sign on to the language of the statute, but would only sign an affidavit averring the language that's actually contained there. Isn't that fair?
That's a fair assessment, but that's not what happened here. I'm the one who...
How do we know that?
Well, I'm the one who actually wrote the affidavit of merit. I was the one who did not track the language inappropriately.
And for us, we have to rely on a record.
I know.
What does the record reflect in that respect?
It doesn't reflect anything either way.
It reflects language different than the language contained in the statute.
It does. And that cannot be denied. It's in black and white. It's our position that the language in the affidavit of merit, though, is still sufficient. It definitely puts...
Well, your argument is it's tantamount to the same things, just semantically stated differently.
Very well put, yes. Better put than I can put it, that's for sure. So that's our position in regards to the affidavit of merit. And going back to the question, it doesn't need to put what the standard of care was in, that was breached. It just needs to put, as I said, what the code says it should indicate. And that's exactly what it did.
Is there any, since this is all statutorily based, is there any help to understanding how far the General Assembly intended the affidavit language to go, for lack of a better term, towards the merits of the statements from a synopsis or any other source of information?
Not that I know of, other than there's a decision from this court, Green versus Wiener, that says that it does not require medical experts to couch their opinions in legal terms or to articulate the standard of care with a high degree of legal precision or with quote-unquote magic words. That's the only thing I'm aware of that gives us any guidance.
At first blush, that language that you just quoted sounds like there's an expectation that there will be some articulation of the standard of care, not just I am familiar with the standard of care, and in my opinion, it was breached. Is that fair?
That is fair, and I believe that rule from the Green case differs from what the statute requires.
Okay.
So there's somewhat of an inconsistency.
Is there any indication as to why it took the Superior Court 3 years to give you a response?
I do not know, Your Honor. I could speculate, but I do not know.
Did you have the same judge from day one?
No. The judge that actually ruled on the motion was the successor of the judge who had it for the first 3 years.
Successor in the sense took their seat because
That's
of
mine.
Retirement
yes.
or otherwise.
Because of retirement, yes. So with the passage of time, obviously, going back to one of the right. earlier questions, that's why I can't say for sure what happened with the CV 5 years ago. I just can't say. And then the last issue.
Excuse me. This whole process that led to the dismissal was triggered by a motion to review the affidavit of merit. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And you received a copy of that motion?
I did.
And the motion set forth the grounds that ultimately, that is the reasons why the affidavit was insufficient?
The motion, I believe, obviously the defense doesn't have the affidavit of merit. So they just asked for an in-camera review by the Superior Court of the affidavit of merit.
Okay.
So I don't believe that their motion would have any grounds in it other than just to ask the trial judge to review it and see if it complies with Section 6853. And then the trial judge, pursuant to that motion, looked at it, said it's not sufficient, and he dismissed the case without giving me any time to correct
it. And it took 3 years from the time that the motion was filed?
The motion was filed, Your Honor, on May 2nd, 2007, and I got the decision in December of last year. The last issue, I believe, for the court to address is whether the affidavit of merit, whether our expert is qualified to render an opinion as to the standard of care for a physician's assistant. The Vita versus Sweeney case clearly says that a physician can render an opinion as to the standard of care for a physician's assistant. So Dr. Muncy, our expert, we believe is an appropriate expert to address the standard of care for a physician's assistant. And that was one of the bases for the dismissal of this action. And we think the law is clear on that. So I think I've addressed the three bases or the three grounds that the judge used at the trial court level to dismiss this action.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, good morning. My name's Brad Gowert. I represent Bernie Schneider, who is the physician's assistant, and then I represent Dr. Fucci. The issue before the court is whether the trial court erred as a matter of law in determining whether there was a viable medical negligence claim when the affidavit of merit had clear legal deficiencies. The three deficiencies were that there was not a CV which is attached, that the expert did not set forth in the affidavit or by a CV which wasn't attached, that he was familiar with the standard of care of a physician's assistant in order to render that opinion. And number three, that the expert did not enumerate a breach of the standard of care in there. Now, since this affidavit of merit amendment was passed by the legislature in 2003, there's been a fair number of cases, but the statute itself, in terms of the minimal requirements that must be met in order for the suit to allow to go forward, are set forth in the statute. And if they're not met
I'd
by
like
the...
to talk to you about the first problem the Superior Court identified, which is no CV. And since we're going to talk about the statute, in our court, if you don't file your notice of appeal on time, we say it's a jurisdictional defect. We can't give you any relief. Your appeal's dismissed. But we have an exception for that. If the problem is attributable to court personnel, then you do get relief. In looking at the statute, it says you need an affidavit and a CV. And then the second part of the statute says, if you don't have the affidavit, the prothonotary should refuse the complaint. My question is, when we're talking about excusable neglect, if you don't have the affidavit and the CV, so in this case, you don't have the CV, and the prothonotary takes it anyway, when the prothonotary should have rejected it under the statute, why isn't that court personnel lulling you into thinking you're okay, by analogy? Just on this first point, no CV.
Because the requirement to file it was not caused by court personnel. I mean, the failure to have it filed was not caused by court personnel. I mean, there was absolutely no error on behalf of the court in terms of whether it was filed or not.
And these were filed under seal. We have a decision, Riggs versus Riggs, where someone filed their complaint in the original, they filed their original notice of appeal in the family court. And the family court judge said to the lawyers, I have no jurisdiction to hear your case because I'm divested of jurisdiction now that you've appealed to the Delaware Supreme Court. In fact, the appeal had never been filed in the Supreme Court. What was in the family court was the original, while the family court judge thought it was a courtesy copy. Our court held that the trial judge in that case lulled you into thinking your appeal had been filed in a timely way because the trial judge said, I'm divested of jurisdiction. By analogy, my question is, if the prothonotary doesn't reject your complaint, why aren't you lulled into thinking you're okay?
I think it's distinguishable for this reason. The items are filed under seal, and then it is upon a motion by the defense that the court goes then and reviews the affidavit and the CV to determine whether it's sufficient. So it's not a per se court requirement, and I recognize the language in the statute where there's probably no affidavit of merit under seal at all that complaint would be rejected. But where it's put in and it's put under seal, that is then reviewed by the judge after there's been a motion filed by the defense.
Well, I'm confused about what's under seal and what isn't. If I understand Justice Holland's question, the premise is that the complaint is filed, just like any other complaint. There'd be no reason for the complaint to be filed under seal.
That's correct.
But if the required accompanying affidavit with all of its required contents, are you suggesting that's under seal and no clerk in the pathonotary's office would ever see that to know what it contains?
Yeah, I am not sure exactly what the practice of the clerk personnel are when it comes under seal, whether that is represented to...
Well, you keep using pronouns. What is under seal?
The affidavit and the CV.
Okay.
And
but the complaint
it says,
is not.
The complaint is not, and it's, the statute says, confidential subject to 68553, the contents of this envelope may only be viewed by the judge of the Superior Court. So that's the language that's put in the statute when that is put under seal, and that would be the affidavit and the curriculum vitae. And the second sort of distinguishing factor from that scenario is, I mean, the affidavit and the CV requirements are clear, and then there is a provision if the plaintiff's attorney needs additional time because they don't have a CV or they need to get the affidavit that they can get a single 60-day extension.
Did that happen here?
There was a single 60-day extension when the complaint was filed without the affidavit. Then the affidavit was filed after that, and the 60-day extension was granted. The CV was not filed. We then filed, after our client was served, a motion to review the affidavit of merit, and that's when the court would have gone in and looked at the contents of the sealed documents to determine
what triggered the 60-day extension?
It was, I think there was a statute of limitations issue coming up regarding the filing of the complaint because of the date of death being greater than 2 years. So the complaint was filed initially along with a motion for a 60-day extension to give additional time to submit the affidavit to the court to not have it be.
Just clarify this. Was the affidavit filed within that 60-day extended period or afterwards?
It was afterwards, and we had filed a motion. It was still not filed, and then it gets into an issue of excusable neglect. Now, at the trial court level, when the plaintiffs filed their motion for reargument, they did not set forth any grounds of excusable neglect. It just said inadvertent, and I would suggest that they have not made a case before this court of excusable neglect.
All right, so I'm looking at the statute here that has this language that only the judge should open the sealed envelope with the affidavit. So the prothonotary gets a complaint with a sealed envelope, and the prothonotary has done everything the prothonotary should do. Now, the question is, when the judge is asked to look at the affidavit based on your motion, when the judge opens the envelope and says, well, you've got an affidavit but no CV because the other side didn't put the CV in the sealed envelope, does the judge have the ability to grant some relief? You know, there are cases that say, all right, I've now opened the envelope, meaning I, the judge, have opened the envelope. I've got your affidavit but no CV. Send me your CV. Are you saying that as a matter of law, and the judge has no discretion to say, send me the CV?
No, Your Honor. I don't think the statute addresses that, and this court, in the Beckett opinion, addressed whether the trial court has discretion to allow an amendment to an affidavit out of time, or I would suggest would include, potentially to include a CV or some deficiency. And in that case, the trial court did not think they had the authority under the statute, which clearly they did not. But this court said for public policy reasons, the trial court can have some discretion to allow that out of time. But this would get more into the discretion of the trial court as to whether to allow it or to not allow it, which might change the standard review from de novo to an abuse of discretion.
I apologize, but I remain totally confused about this 60-day extension. What triggered it and for what purpose? It sounds to me like there's nothing, no way for someone who failed to put the CV in the sealed envelope to know of that mistake until someone actually opens it and lets them know it's not there. So what is the point of a 60-day extension to do something you don't know you need to do?
The two are could be related or not, but the 60-day extension was filed at the time that the complaint was filed because they did not have an affidavit of merit at all, and they wanted to file the complaint to get it under the two-year statute of limitations. And so 60 days was granted by the trial court to allow the plaintiffs to submit an affidavit. And the thinking of the statute is, if you're a plaintiff's attorney and you may not get all the records or you may need additional time, that you could get an extension.
Forget about thinking of the statute. Let's just get some dates squared away. Complaint is filed on day one. On day one, a motion for a 60-day extension is also filed, and that motion is, please give me 60 days to submit the other requirement, which is the affidavit and CV, right?
Correct.
That motion is granted. Am I right?
Correct.
Okay, so on day 60, is the CV or is the sealed envelope with the physician's affidavit filed with the court?
The affidavit is filed with the court, but it is does not contain the curriculum vitae.
Okay, so I just wanted to be clear that after asking for a 60-day extension, the plaintiff acted within that 60 days or by 60 days in terms of submitting the sealed envelope that had the affidavit in it.
That
right?
is correct.
Okay. And at that point, neither you nor the plaintiff actually knows what's in that sealed envelope. If you know, the secretary put her letter to her boyfriend in there instead of the affidavit, nobody would know, right?
I would argue that the plaintiff's attorney should know what's
okay.
going in the sealed envelope that's being filed with the court.
That's fine. But, so now on day 60, there is something that's been filed that purports to comply with the statute, right?
Correct.
But in fact, it doesn't comply with the statute, at least clearly with respect to not having the CV, right?
Correct.
So when does the plaintiff, we're now at, say, day 61, when does the plaintiff find out that, hey, you forgot to put in the CV?
Well, they theoretically, whether they knew or should have known it at the time is one
Forget
issue.
That.
Then when the defense files a motion would be another opportunity that would come across the
okay,
desk.
Okay, so and when in relation to day 60 did the defense file the motion?
The motion was filed after day 60 because service
right.
was not obtained on the defense.
Okay, I just want to know when. When was the motion filed?
The motion was filed April 9th. The complaint was filed 12/28 of 2006. And April 9th of 2007, the motion was filed
okay.
around the time of the answers
okay.
once the defendants
Fine.
Were served with the
so
complaint.
So the motion's filed on April 8th, 2007, and then the court does, the next thing the court does is that on April 27th, the court says the case is dismissed. Is
on
that
April,
right?
Dates, I think, April 25th, according to my docket, but around that period of time, the court issues the order dismissing it.
Okay. And at least as far as I can understand this, it's not until that order that the plaintiff realizes that the envelope did not contain a CV, right?
I think that's fair, given my argument is still that the plaintiff
should
know the
known.
Requirements.
Right, right. But
I think that's fair. Let's
just assume everybody's being honest here, and the plaintiff thought they put the CV in there, and somehow it didn't get in the envelope, okay? So on April 25th, the plaintiff finds out he has failed to comply with the statute, and a week later, perhaps less than a week later, he files a motion to be allowed to submit the CV. And says that he should be granted this motion because it was excusable neglect, right?
He does not use the words excusable neglect. He files a motion, says they inadvertently omitted the CV. They don't make a case for excusable neglect. They don't set forth any grounds of excusable neglect.
Right. So it was inadvertent, and they're asking for permission, and then 3 years go by, and the court says no. And that's where we are.
Yes, except there are two other very important parts of the affidavit of merit. Perhaps if the trial judge were just dealing with the omission of the CV, that might have been a slightly different scenario. In other words,
well, I want to kind of separate them out because it's absolutely clear that the CV had to be there and it wasn't. The trial court and you obviously also feel that there were other deficiencies in the affidavit of merit. But let's assume for the moment that the only thing wrong was I forgot to put in the CV. is it your position that that is something that you have to prove some sort of excusable neglect in order to be able to insert that in 5 days later?
Yes. The statute clearly requires that it wasn't done. It wasn't anybody else's responsibility other than the plaintiffs to make sure it was done. That deficiency isn't appreciated, and now you've discovered that you've got a problem. You would have to show excusable neglect, meaning that this neglectful act was what a reasonable person would do under the circumstances. Now,
what did this court say about that in Beckett?
Beckett didn't specifically address excusable neglect, and the facts of Beckett were slightly different because that was a toothpick in a toe, and they were going under the exception that it was a foreign object left in for an extended period of time. And then once the court ruled that it was not a foreign object exception to the statute, the plaintiff's attorney quickly submitted an affidavit of merit, and the court allowed that out of time. So I would suggest part of the excusable neglect was part of the procedural history of those proceedings, but I don't know that it was specifically enumerated as an excusable neglect requirement because the trial court thought they had no authority to do it, and then for public policy reasons, this court gave that time. And some judges...
I need to follow up with two questions.
Very good.
Initially, I asked you whether the affidavit was filed after the 60-day extension period had expired, and you indicated that it had expired. Now you're saying it had not expired.
The affidavit was filed within the 60 days without
period.
The CV.
Right. But so, it was filed, the affidavit itself was filed within the 60 days.
That's correct.
All right. Then after your motion to review the affidavit was filed, the court, issued an order dismissing?
Correct.
And how many days? Was that within the same year? Was that 3 years later or within a
short
period?
No, the dismissal was in within a month after the review of the affidavit of merit, within 4 months of the suit being filed.
The three-year delay then was from the time the motion for reconsideration was filed or motion for relief from the judgment.
That's correct. That was what was sitting in the...
I'm intrigued by your answer to Justice Berger's question, which I read to be saying, this case might have turned out differently on the issue of the ability to have relief from the dismissal for failing to file the CV if there hadn't been problems with the other two elements of the affidavit, which I will refer to as the merits elements, namely the judge's perceived inadequacy of the statement about knowledge of the standard of care and whether or not a breach of the standard of care approximately caused injuries. Is that a statement because of something in the record or based on your experience, that if it had just been a failure to comply with the technical requirement of not having the CV in the sealed envelope and not having known that it wasn't there and filed it within the automatic extension to put it in that sealed envelope, this case might have turned out differently, singularly on the issue of granting relief for failing to attach the CV.
Yeah. Obviously, there's no way for me to know that, but if the narrow issue that we were talking about were the CV...
No, but you're an officer of the court. You have experience in this area. That experience is always helpful. We need to know how things work in Superior Court in this arena of medical malpractice.
I think that there are many judges who give some degree of relief when the affidavit of merit has some deficiency or the court needs further inquiry on it. That's not always true, and sometimes it depends upon the degree of the insufficiency. Did
the court say why it was not granting relief here?
It did not.
Is it just denied?
I think it was my recollection. It was just denied,
without any reason.
Right.
But well, how can we say that's within the discretion of the court if we don't understand or can't review how the court came to that conclusion?
the plaintiffs did not make an excusable neglect argument when they filed the motion, and the affidavit was insufficient in the beginning, so it should have never been. That was the issue that's under review. Was that correct? Was the court's rejection of the affidavit not being in compliance correct or not correct? Then there is sort of the second issue of the affidavit. The CV was not included timely with the affidavit, and did the court abuse any discretion in allowing that or not allowing that? And Chief Justice Steele's comments to me is, if that was the only issue in the case, might the result have been different? I'm not 100% sure, but it could have. But you couple that with two other very key parts of the requirements of the affidavit of merit that are insufficient, you know, and the court.
But why don't you explain to us why they are insufficient? Because we heard from opposing counsel who suggested that the statute doesn't require any kind of detailed explanation, just a statement from the expert that, based on their training, education, and experience, that they are familiar with the standard of care, and that they have an opinion that the standard of care has been breached in a way that proximately caused the injury claim. Why is this affidavit inadequate?
The statute clearly sets forth that the expert should set forth their opinion that the applicable standard of care has been breached. Not a conclusory statement that the statute, that the standard of care has been breached, but what is their opinion that the standard of care has been breached? And it's the applicable standard of care. I mean, the plaintiff's affidavit here didn't even use the standard of care language, and I recognize the court has had some opinions where there's no magic language, you look at it. So, but they clearly didn't even say a breach of the standard of care in there. But if you read the statute, where it says the expert shall set forth his opinion that the applicable standard of care was breached and that that was approximate cause, that's more than just saying, in my opinion, the standard of care was breached. I mean, the Superior Court has the opportunity to review that. This boilerplate affidavit, which would say the same thing.
Well,
in
if
every
the objective is to weed out frivolous suits, and you've got an opinion under oath that the standard of care is breached by a physician with a CV attached, hypothetically, that shows a very competent physician who's familiar, doesn't that accomplish the purpose of the statute to screen out frivolous claims?
No, because you're dealing with boilerplate language. You can't even enumerate what the standard of care is that was breached.
But don't we have to rely on medical professionals to be honest? In other words, if you get a doctor who's licensed and has an extensive background as a physician, and that doctor is willing to submit an affidavit saying, in my opinion, based upon what I've reviewed of the medical records, there's been medical negligence, and that it was proximate cause of the plaintiff Dishman's death, doesn't that, by definition, weed out a frivolous lawsuit, because the physician would have to be outright lying if this were a frivolous lawsuit?
Without just solely addressing the integrity of what the physician does or doesn't do, the boilerplate language that it's reasonable to believe medical negligence may have committed is different than the physician saying the standard of care in Delaware is X, or the standard of care national standard is X, and it was breached in the following way. So something more than just boilerplate language, what I would contend is a fair reading of what the statute requires. If you look at the Simmons opinion, where the affidavit actually came in, and then it came in with some expert deposition stuff.
All right, well, you're really talking then about some sort of pleading with particularity or a planning with particularity standard.
Right, so Rule 9 requires negligence be pleaded with particularity.
All right.
So how can the affidavit?
The statute doesn't address the degree of detail or particularity that's required of the affidavit. Is that fair?
It says opinion in the applicable standard of care. And so when you say the expert says opinion on the applicable standard of care, that requires some specificity.
That could mean that the physician could state, I'm familiar with the applicable standard of care, and it's my opinion that that standard was violated in this case, and that approximately caused the injury to the plaintiff. Isn't that sufficient?
That's the plaintiff's argument, but the defense contends that,
right.
contends that is insufficient.
Does the trial judge read this affidavit in connection with the complaint?
Can. Most of them do.
Because in the complaint, negligence would be pleaded with particularity.
That's correct.
And the affidavit simply saying, I'm familiar with the claim in this case, and I'm familiar with the applicable standard of care, and in my opinion, it's been breached, right?
That's right. And can I, yes, and I, can
if,
I sum
if,
up?
If your answer is incomplete to my question, go ahead.
They review the affidavit to look for its compliance with the statute, and that's what I put in my motion. Some judges will look at the complaint on the allegation regarding that. And if this is very simple to meet the requirements of this with the expert, this is not complicated. And they either do it or they don't. And if the court finds it's not sufficient, some judges will give them additional time if there's an issue of the degree of how they explained it or what's involved, or if it's insufficient in the judge's opinion, then they will say it's insufficient and dismiss the complaint.
Are you suggesting that affidavits of merit often pass or don't pass depending on the fortuity of the judge?
No, I think there is becoming great consistency in the courts reviewing the affidavits, and insufficient ones are being thrown out, such as this one, and ones in compliance are being allowed. One more quick point. The Bernie Schneider in this case, and there's no familiarity, there's no sufficiency in the affidavit to make any claim against the physician's assistant. I see I'm out of time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Take the case under advisement and recess.